Hello and welcome to Linux Lads. We are officially the only Linux podcast that is 100% gluten-free. absolutely. We have got, as usual, a most action-packed show for you. We have a big release later on to talk about, which everyone pretty much fucking knows about. So without further ado, Connor, OnePlus One, you've been doing funny things to your OnePlus One.
So what I've been doing is I've been putting Ubuntu Touch on my OnePlus One. And so far it's actually pretty good. I suppose it's kind of 80 to 90% there. There's a couple of maps or apps here there, like WhatsApp and whatnot, that aren't really on it. But there's a really good web browser, really good mapping app. It's quite good.
And I see you got like Libre Lek running on your ROC 64. That's interesting.
Yeah, indeed. I got a ROC 64 thanks to Pine, which Lucas was on a couple of podcasts ago, and went out and purchased it myself. And my idea was this is just going to be a NAS box or a media device. And I settled on a media device and put Libre Lek on it. And there's an MB plugin. You can put an MB server on Libre Lek, essentially Kodi. And then from your other devices, you can then stream your media over MB. It's actually really good.
Nice, nice. Off to the races. Mike, what about yourself?
Yeah, no, I've been doing pretty much, I haven't been doing much, but I've done some battling with JavaScript, which was horrible, because basically I don't know much JavaScript. And I went to the zoo, which was amazing. It was a lovely day, bank holiday Monday, and Dublin Zoo is just exactly the right size for a day trip, so that you see all of it and you don't have to hurry up. And it's got amazing stuff, obviously. Penguins, the best animals represented, so that's all good.
Yeah, that all sounds really fun. While you were at the zoo, Mike, I was at home in my dressing gown turning myself inside out on the jacks. So I got myself one of those lovely change in the seasons mega flus, I don't know what the hell it was, but I spent the hottest weekend this year inside catching up on Marvel movies on the couch. So yeah, not to make too much of a pity party out of it, I'm better now. We have a pretty nice episode coming up. We've got some news from Purism, we've got some news from Nextcloud, of course a little bit of Pine64, but then of course the big one, 1904. So we're going to get right on that and dedicate a lot of time to that. But first, we have an Azure coupon code. So Azure, they're a security-focused VPN provider based in Sweden. That's where the law doesn't require them to log traffic, so they don't do it. They operate servers in Europe and North America. Their servers are also owned and not rented, installed on location by their engineers and running Debian Linux. They provide a WireGuard and OpenVPN option. Their client is GPL version 2 licensed, and it's available on Linux. They take all major payment methods, including cryptocurrency. Also, you don't even have to give them an email address. So the code LinuxLads, use that when ordering. Make sure when you click the green add code button, or make sure that you click the green add code button to get the discount, and that code's valid until the 1st of January 2020. So first up on the agenda, what have we got? Purism, Libre 5. We've got some video evidence of the progress. So apparently this is like the first kind of glimpse we've got really of the device at this sort of a stage. Connor, you put this in. Have you seen it?
I have been having a look. It's quite exciting. Certainly pretty good progress. The last video demonstration I saw of it was about a month ago, and it was really laggy. The scaling on the operating system wasn't the best at all. It was really kind of proof of concept, and I was thinking, genie, if they're at that stage, then what's the story here? And then they came out with this, and boot up in under 10 seconds. It's showing incoming calls, SMS chat, and web browsing, and even dev kit to dev kit video calling, or not video calling, sorry, just regular audio calling to prove that the dev kits work with their mobile data with the SIM card, and it can make phone calls. So really exciting.
That was one of my questions, actually. Yeah. So that, is that like a GSM call or like a VoIP call?
I don't think they clarified. That's a good point. It could be a VoIP call, but in the videos, it does appear that there's your normal mobile phone bar signal seems to be going up. So I don't think it's going over Wi-Fi, but it could be wrong.
I suppose we can find that out and get it in the show notes. Mike, did you catch that? Did you?
No, I didn't actually. Realize if they are using GSM or if they are using just VoIP on there. I know that they wanted to make their communications or the device based around Matrix. So I'm not sure how far they got, even for phone calls somehow. Although I'm not sure how that was going to work.
Next up, Nextcloud 16 is out. Mike, you stuck this in. Obviously, we make fairly regular use of Nextcloud and all the shit we do. So, Mike, you could probably speak more about what's new in this version.
Yeah, I think this version is going to see me finally move from on-device storage for everything to the cloud properly, because I wouldn't do it if it meant to give Google, Microsoft, Apple, or whoever all my data. But Nextcloud, as I've been seeing recently, we've been seeing that they are really maturing. The project is getting to a place where it's stable, where you can rely on it doing the basic stuff properly. So I'm very happy to see that the next iteration is going to just basically add polish. There are some security features that are going to be aided by some kind of a machine learning algorithm that will try to figure out if whoever is logging in is a proper legitimate user or if somebody is trying to hack it. And also for notifications recommendations for if you are searching for stuff. There is going to be a new privacy center that lets users see their data and who has access to it. The Talk application will let administrators define commands which users can call from the chat. There is going to be a project application so that people can basically, I haven't seen it working yet, but I'd imagine it like a Asana or some kind of a Kanban board, and access control for group folders to enable administrators to control who has access to what. So it looks like a feature-packed release, and I love to see Nextcloud going from strength to strength.
Connor.
I'm just looking through, as Mike was speaking, I was just looking through the article there, and in relation to some of the points that he was making of you can now switch the disk from your other cloud providers. I was thinking of Google Docs and what, or Google Drive and whatnot. And you can set up your own one. I mean, talking back to my Rock 64, there's something called Nextcloud Pi. It was initially for the Raspberry Pi, but it runs on other single board computers. I think they have an official release for the Rock 64 as well. And it's just a case of you have this device and you hook up a big hard drive to it over USB or whatever your connection of choice. And that is your cloud. And you can even have it where it is connected to the wider internet, and they're showcasing their mobile phone application, and it just says, "Put in your server address and log in with your username and password," and essentially there you go. There's your own private cloud, so it is quite compelling.
Next up, we have a nice little Pine 64 live stream to look forward to. Mike, you put that in. What do you want to tell us more about that?
So this is going to be over, unfortunately, by the time this episode is out. But the people at Pine 64 are going to be live on YouTube with live chat Sunday, so it's in 2 days. I believe the recording of it is going to stay on YouTube, and they are going to be talking about the Pine Book and the Pine Phone. So if you've missed that, then you can watch it how it was going to be is recorded, whatever suits you time-wise. So I made a real mess of it. There's going to be a link in the show notes that will, if you haven't been on the live chat, you can see the recording there, and you'll get hopefully some more insight into Pine Book and Pine Phone.
Connor, you found a pretty good hack to sync your GNOME shell extensions between desktops. Tell us more about that.
It's essentially your GNOME shell extensions, rather than, let's say, you have a fresh install and going in and saying, oh, I like these three or four GNOME shell extensions that you always enable, rather than going in and going, okay, brand new install, fuck's sake, swipe. It's a way of syncing them so they're permissive. So you just log in with one username and password, and there's your four favorite ones. Essentially, it's a way of syncing them, just like you can sync your passwords between browsers and that sort of thing, and and bookmarks and whatnot. It's not officially from GNOME. It's a third party workaround.
Okay, so time for the big discussion of this episode. We've all been rocking the 1904 Ubuntu, of course. It's that time of year. I think all three of us, I think between us, we went through, what was it, 7 different variants? So yeah, we all really put it to the test and really just hammered on it for 2 days. It was crazy. Guys, Connor, initial impressions.
My initial thoughts, at first I tried out Ubuntu Budgie. It's very flash. It kind of wasn't for me. The way Ubuntu Budgie is laid out, it has the taskbar at the bottom and a dock taskbar at the top and a dock at the bottom. Wasn't for me. I think the way that it's laid out in Solus is probably better. But that's pretty easily configurable. I think I was able to swap things around pretty quickly. It's essentially, if you like GNOME Shell, but don't like its layout, don't like that it's keyboard focused, and you want it to become more mouse focused with a menu, clickable menu and so on, then essentially go for Budgie, because that is essentially GNOME Shell that looks like Windows 10 is how I describe Budgie.
Would you say that it's better or worse if you compare it to Cinnamon?
I personally prefer Cinnamon. So if there was an Ubuntu Cinnamon edition, I'd really like that. Some would argue that is Linux Mint, but Linux Mint does its own customizations and also is only based off an LTS, whereas Linux Mint will not be doing a version that's based on 1904. But I've tried pretty much all of them. Ubuntu Mate is pretty much the same. I'm not saying that's necessarily a bad thing. Zubuntu with XFCE was pretty much the same. Again, not saying that was necessarily a bad thing. The big thing with those releases is a newer kernel, newer backend, and they seem to be quite responsive. Ubuntu Studio, I did not get around to testing, unfortunately. Ubuntu Kylin or Chillin, I think is pronounced. I actually did get a chance to test out in the 20 minutes just before we started recording. So I quickly just went through that. And I took a couple of screenshots. I might link those in the show notes. If you can, it starts off with Chinese by default, but just like any Ubuntu in the installer, you can scroll and select English. It broadly accepts that, except for they do have GNOME software. So in English, you'll be able to, because GNOME software supports English, we'll be able to navigate and install new software, no problem whatsoever. They do have their own software center as well, so they supply both. By default, that is full of Chinese characters, so you definitely would not be able to understand anything there. It looks very kind of a mix between Windows XP and but with Windows 10 kind of transparency is a way of my way of describing it. So if you're familiar with Windows, it might be one for you. But I think the jewel of the crown is just regular old stock Ubuntu. It actually looks really, really nice.
Yeah, I have to agree. Like that was a nice rundown of all the kind of the those extraneous ones, the weirdos. But a lot of people love those desktops. So it's great that Ubuntu has that reach that it can just it, like everyone just like immediately reskins it and respins it and whatnot. I was actually really curious about stock Ubuntu. So, because I have not actually tried it in quite a few years. So, I first of all put it on my laptop, the Apollo, and it was quite good. I quite enjoyed it. Like it didn't seem like a system hog, which I thought it would be, but everything just was snappy and you know fluid, and it looked nice. You know the screen isn't amazing on that device, so sometimes everything can look a little bit too packed in because I think it's like a 1080 display, but it's a small screen, so everything looks very kind of tiny on it. But I think it's like an 11-inch screen or something. But Ubuntu as a whole, this release is very, very good. I really liked it. It's very uncluttered. It still retains those favorite icons down the left-hand side. I actually found that quite useful. That article you linked, Connor, the 10 things you should do before you install Ubuntu, or after you install Ubuntu, I got a really great one. We'll link that in the show notes because it's a great tip. It's such a small thing, but like on your favorites on the left-hand dock with all your application menus, you can get the tweaks for Ubuntu, and you can enable, I think it's just with a terminal command. I'd have to find out, but
it is.
That's right. With the minimize on click. So that's something I really loved at Windows 7 of all places. So that tiny little action, like you click to minimize, click to maximize, just the same icon, seems like such a simple thing, but it makes the experience so much better. Mike, what variants were you trying out?
Well, I've tried Kubuntu because I have a love for Kubuntu or for KDE, but unfortunately I am in the middle of my GNOME cycle. So I not only distro hop, but I cycle between desktop environments about half a year each, plus or minus. And I'm just right now, I'm pretty much on the peak of enjoying the GNOME workflow. And so I installed Kubuntu. I installed it on two machines. One was my laptop, one was work PC. I've looked at it right bang from the beginning. It has got the same wallpaper that my KDE Neon installation had a few months back by default. So I'm like, then I look at the windows. They've got a big, massive border around them, which I'm not a big friend of. But that's me being really shallow. And of course, this being Kubuntu, you can basically configure it to death. Like you can do anything to it. So those are only superficial things. There was one thing that bothered me a little, or a lot actually. I pretty much learned to use meta and tab keyboard combination to switch windows, and it's really important for me that it works. Not alt tab, not shift tab, grave control, or whatever other people use, just meta and tab. It has to be there, it has to work. Otherwise, I can't use a computer. And unfortunately, I tried to change this to default alt tab, which it is, to switch windows in Kubuntu to this shortcut, and I just couldn't make it work on either of the two systems. It just started only cycling through like UI components, like buttons on a page or something, and I don't know what's wrong with it. Maybe it's me just not being able to configure it properly. Other than that, on the plus side, everything else works. I tried Discover, which is the GUI for the package manager. That worked. It's like almost flawlessly. There were some icons missing or anything, but I think that it's really gone almost to a state where it really is the kind of glorious shop window for the KD or for the Kubuntu project that it should be. So I tried to install a normal package. I tried to install a snap and it all worked properly. So I think as a result, it's a solid release. It's Kubuntu, so just because I don't like the defaults, like the fact that the icon doesn't bounce anymore next to the cursor and that Dolphin doesn't open applications, files and folders on single click. Just because I don't like it doesn't mean that I can't reconfigure it easily. And with the exception of the Windows switcher snafu, everything else works perfectly, so I can't complain.
One thing I don't like about KDE is the fact that it bounces. So there you go. Different folks for different strokes.
Yeah, I think that was Michael Tunnell from Tax Digital basically advised them, if I remember correctly, maybe it was a release before, they advised the Kubuntu team to do some design changes, and the non-bouncing icon was one of them, and the double click to open was another one. And when I run Kubuntu, I really like the fact that there are, not Kubuntu, but KDE Neon, I like the fact that there are these little tiny things that are a bit out there that harken back to the time of KDE 3.5, which was the first KDE that I really used. And so there's a little bit of nostalgia there that doesn't do me any harm, but that I really like about it. And I understand that people like to modernize things, but this is, and I do as well, but this is just the few things I like to keep the same. So just to keep the line there, the little thing that ties it back to the first experience I really had with Kubuntu, with KDE.
Overall, my summary of this, I'm not saying that this topic is due to end or anything, but overall, my experience of particularly Ubuntu stock is just, even though it's not an LTE release, it seems like it's a very refined release. It seems to be that they just refined on little things. They made it faster. It's quite snappy, quite responsive. New kernel, so new supports there. And new GNOME release. And the GNOME release itself seems to be snappy and responsive and refined. And so it seems to be a mature release, despite the fact there's not an LTS.
Yeah, I can only agree. I've never, like, as I was saying to you guys on Telegram during the week, I was like, oh my God, I've never been this like excited about a new Linux distro. And it's so strange that it's like, it would be Ubuntu to hit that kind of note, because like, we've been talking about all sorts of other distros for the last few months. Like, you know, what's the next big thing? You know, what's the next distro to kind of impress everybody and take a little leap forward in the Linux desktop? But like, you know, at the end of the day, it's just good old fashioned Ubuntu that kind of impressed us this time around. I find that a little bit fun, but yeah, I guess it's got that backing. It's got all sorts of resources behind it. So, I mean, it makes sense, and it's got a very dedicated team. You know, it's a real passion project as well as a commercial entity. So, you know, why not? And it's kind of like the, you know, the U2 of Linux, I guess. Yeah, you love it or you hate it, you know.
Oh, I was wondering where you were going with that one.
Well, you know, the fame element and also the kind of, yeah, they just, you either think they're assholes or you love them. I don't know.
I don't know. I know there are plenty of assholes who are all over the internet saying how Ubuntu and Canonical are bad for whatever reason. Well, more likely no reason, just because they are angry at the world, you know. But I do have some criticism as well. I mean, I've been nothing but criticizing today. That's not good. But anyway, basically, I stuck Ubuntu on my HP laptop, and that thing is old. Like, it's all Intel, no graphics card, no nothing. Well, there is an integrated chip, but anyway. And it's, I bought it secondhand in 2014 or 2015, so it is falling apart, and every little, I think that that's what it is. Every little speed improvement is drastically visible. So I installed Ubuntu, I installed Steam, I installed Sunless Sky, which is a game that I enjoy playing. And it was stuttering constantly. I tried the same with Manjaro, and the stuttering almost disappeared. Like, that would be a stutter every 10 minutes, whereas on Ubuntu it would be more or less constant. So I think there is still, I don't know if it's, I don't know what kind of, why that is. I don't know the technical differences between the distributions. Maybe it's the implementation of Steam. Maybe it's the implementation of, I don't know, Wine libraries or whatever it uses. But for me, it was significantly slower. That being said, so that I just don't like sound like the biggest grunge, I've tried the stock Ubuntu. I opened it up, and the experience for, like, if I look at it from the point of view of a person whose laptop is not falling apart, who, you know, if I look at it through the point of view of a normal user, or the user whom this is targeted at, the experience is just flawless. I like the way Ubuntu takes GNOME Shell, incorporates it in, so that is, you know, adds some usability features, make sure that it works for most people. It's like, if no matter what I said before, and no matter my personal preferences, if I was to take a person who comes to me and say, I would like to try Linux, and there's too many distros, what do I choose? I'd say, like, 99% of times, unless there was a different reason for it, I'd say Ubuntu. You get the most, like, whole all in all polished experience. You get stability, you get reasonable speed, and you get the company behind it and the community behind it for support. So I think, just to sum this tirade up, it's another really nice release from the Ubuntu community and from Canonical, and it's good that things are going, as far as I can see, in the right direction.
Yeah, it's like I always, you know me, I always come at this shit from the point of view of a person who uses Linux as their daily driver. You know, not as concerned with the technical nuts and bolts of everything. I just enjoy using Linux, and I enjoy seeing how it can start to match the technology and the software that other people use as their daily drivers. And, you know, in my opinion, it surpasses it in most things, but with this version of Ubuntu, like, it's so seamless, like, how using it just feels very polished, very snappy. So that this is the first time I can properly say this is like it. This is like a daily driver Linux distro. Like, there's no rough edges really that I can see that are kind of insurmountable. Like, it has the cohesiveness of a proprietary product, which is not something I can say for a lot of Linux distros. Connor?
One thing I will say is, and I think I've said it in previous podcasts, but and previous Ubuntu versions, but it bears repeating, the Yaru default theme fair fucks with them. It's a fairly, very good theme. I mean, I like the fact that it's Linux, you can change the theme, so it's something that I do think that I probably would change a couple of things here or there. But if somebody says this is a locked down computer, you cannot change anything about the appearance, just like the guys in elementary with their Pantheon desktop environment, the theme is locked down. If you sat me down in front of an Ubuntu 1904 with the default Yaru theme, I would be perfectly happy using that theme. It's quite well designed. And there's a little 80s Easter egg in, it's not the default background, but there's kind of an 80s neon background if you looked through the backgrounds that are supplied with it, which I kind of switched to that one. And in my poking around in VirtualBox, I did kind of do a recording of how you would change the theme to something else. I think I picked the Materia theme. I did a recording, which I might include in the show notes. And if that is a thing that people like after watching my awful attempt at trying to do a video tutorial, then feel free to email us and say, yeah, keep that up, or no, it was shit, Connor, don't ever do that again.
I'd like to go back to something that you said there, that if this was a computer that is completely locked down and you can't change anything, I think for some people, and maybe quite many, this is almost that. So this is going to be a workstation for a lot of people to come sit down to, and they might either not want to, or they will not even be able to change the menus and stuff like that. You know, this is for people to expand, who will use it to work, to do other stuff than tinker with their desktop. So the fact that they are getting it to look this amazing is extremely important, because this is the default that a lot of people will spend a lot of time looking at, and the usability and the experience of it is really important. And I think they are getting it right. If you, obviously, this is a personal preference, but if you put me in front of few desktop environments, then Ubuntu would, or the implementations even, and even compare it with the other operating systems, then Ubuntu would definitely, for me, be up in the top three or top two at the moment.
Yeah, I'll be inclined to agree, definitely in the top three, top two for me for Ubuntu.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely been a bit of a love-in for Ubuntu, so I can only kind of echo what you guys are saying. Like, yeah, it's kind of my daily driver now. It's on the desktop, it's on the laptop. I don't have any plans to change it, because, you know, I've gotten my groove already with this keyboard shortcuts. Like, I know my way around it now. It's instinctive already. So so yeah, that's hard to find. I haven't had that since like earlier versions of Linux Mint. As you know, I sojourned into the KDE land, wasteland. he didn't say wasteland, did he? oh my God, that's so offensive to KDE users. I didn't like it. Like, I tried to like it at the start, and I did kind of like it for a little while. But yeah, after a while, I was just like, it's just so ugly. I just can't look at it anymore. I tried some themes, and but it looked too much like the cockpit of a space shuttle or something. Like it was too much sometimes. Like, every configuration menu, while it was nicely organized and it had its own aesthetic, I guess, and it wasn't ugly per se, it was too harsh or something. Like, that, I think that's the word for me when it comes to KDE.
It's very industrial, isn't it?
Yes, that's exactly it, yeah.
Throwing a speculation bone out there, what I'm thinking is that the reason why 1904 is so refined is speaking of an LTS, 2004 is two releases away, and the rumor is that they want to get Wayland working by default on the next LTS. So between now and 2004, there's an interim release, which would be 1910. And so this is pure speculation, but the one that they break everything and learn from it could be 1910. So why not have a good, solid, refined release before that?
I can see that coming. Yeah, definitely. People need to get on Wayland now. How old is Xorg? Is it like 20, 25 years? And the time doesn't stand by, does it, sir?
Yeah, they're saying for the last LTS release that they were very nearly doing it, but they felt that it wasn't stable enough for an LTS. So that makes me think that they're going to try again for the next LTS. And since they haven't tried with 1904, Wayland being default, I'm guessing that they're going to try in 1910.
I think there are some signs that what you're saying is probably going to become true, is that, for example, I think fractional scaling in the GNOME environment for Ubuntu is an option. If you have a high DPI monitor, you can turn it on in Wayland, but I don't think you can turn it on in Xorg session unless you enable somehow experimental features. I think that's what I heard on Ubuntu podcast anyway. Yeah, so I think they are slowly transitioning, and I think that you are right. This is going to be Wayland is going to be in 2004 the new desktop, the new Exotics. Basically, the new default.
So we've had some folks ask us, where's the boner section gone? So you'd be glad to know that we're bringing it back this time around. Connor, I'll go to you first. What is your particular boner of the last several weeks or however long it's been since we did it?
My latest boner has been Ubuntu Touch. I want to give a shout out to those guys because they're, as I said, it's about 80 or 90% there for me as a viable alternative operating system for versus Android. Been poking around with it. Most of the applications that I would use would be there, bar some things like WhatsApp or your, you know, banking application, which banking applications are usually the stickers. But if you can get around those kind of things that are only exist on Android, then I would say, yeah, it's a viable, solid, stable operating system. So Ubuntu Touch.
Mike, I believe you have a boner for us.
Yeah, I have a big erection of appreciation. That's for all the projects that provide possibilities to edit videos on Linux, because last episode I said in my sleepy tired rant that people who want to edit 4K videos should probably get a Mac. That's a stupid thing to say, and I feel like I said, like I basically looked down on a lot of projects that try to achieve the goal or try to provide the video editing software for Linux, like KDN Live and all the others. I'm not a video editor, obviously, so I don't know much about it, but probably should have thought twice before saying that, because definitely there are possibilities to edit video on Linux. It might not be the standard of Final Cut Pro, but as with everything on Linux, we are, you know, it's always improving. It's a live organism. It's not like the Mac, where if Apple decides to do X, X is going to happen. This is much more live environment, and therefore by default much better. So yeah, definitely my boner goes to all the video editors for Linux.
Okay, so Ubuntu is good. That is the official line on Linux Lads, I believe. So I think we're going to start to wrap up now. As always, if you've liked hearing us waffle on for the past 45 minutes, you can support us by going to linuxlads.com/support and sending us some European guineas or whatever you like to send. So as always, you can get us on Telegram, linuxlads.com/telegram. Same works for Twitter, Facebook, Mastodon, and you can also email us at show@linuxlads.com if you feel like it. So as always, thanks for listening. I've been Shane.
I've been Connor.
And I've been Mike.
See you guys.
Bye.
Bye.